You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
Welcome. This is Bonnie Goldman, Editorial Director of The Body Pro. Right now, I'm in the poster session where researchers are standing in front of their posters. There's nothing like hearing the results of research directly from those who have actually conducted the research. It is these women and men who are transforming HIV treatment and care. In this podcast, the researchers will introduce themselves and then summarize their study. After their summary, I'll ask a few questions.
I'm Rohan Hazra, work at the Pediatric Adolescent and Maternal AIDS branch of the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, which is one of the institutes that makes up the National Institutes of Health. And so we have a project that's called FACTS, the Pediatric HIV-AIDS Cohort Study, which is aiming to enroll 450 HIV-infected children between the ages of 7 and 16. All of these children acquired HIV from their mother, so they're perinatally infected. And we're looking at long-term outcomes in these children related to cognitive function, cardiac function, liver disease, kidney disease, bone health. And so we actually have a number of posters in this meeting addressing some of those issues. But this particular work actually grew out of the work that's at the next poster, which is looking at trends in treatment and how they've changed over time as the new drugs have been developed and if some end up being approved for children, some aren't. As we were doing that analysis, we realized that 5% of the children in this project, in the FACTS project, were not on any antiretrovirals when they enrolled on the study. So we thought it would be interesting to see, is there something about those children that would be interesting to report? So as I mentioned, it's 5% of the cohort. So at the time that we did the data analysis, that was 12 children. But when we looked at their criteria, realized that in fact, some of them may well actually need to be on treatment and just for whatever reason were not. And so we wanted to really look more closely at those that did not at this point meet criteria for treatment. So we defined those criteria accordingly, that they needed to have been off antiretrovirals for 6 months or more, that they have a good CD4 count, and that they have no clinical progression of disease. And then we basically put together a fair amount of information on them and basically showed a number of things. These are, again, as I said, we are enrolling children 7 to 16, so the median age of this group was 14 and a half. About half were female, half were black. Most of them actually did not have extensive clinical disease. One third of them only really had what we call CDC category B or C disease. All of them had been treated in the past with HART, but while now on this protocol, for whatever reasons, were not on antiretrovirals. And in fact, the median time that they'd been off ARTs was over 2 years, even though they'd had close to 9 years of treatment prior to that. And despite being off treatment altogether for 2 years, they basically have maintained a relatively good CD4 count. So most of them have CD4 count in the 5 to 600s. They have positive viral loads, but they're, you know, low to moderate. And so...
Let me interrupt. Sorry. Okay. So the duration of ART discontinuation... I need to ask you about that.
Oh, yes. No, you're actually right. So the median age that they started treatment with, sorry, I misread this, was 2.2 years. They'd had a total of close to 9 years of treatment and now have been off for 4 to 5 years off of treatment altogether. What we're proposing here, though, is, well, we're not proposing anything. I think what we're trying to do is say that these children do exist and that I think it should hopefully prompt investigators to think about designing very careful clinical trials to see, can we give our patients, especially as they get into their teenage years and they're dealing with a lot of other stresses in their lives and have a lot of problems with adherence to medication, potentially could we design a careful clinical trial to actually look at safely discontinuing treatment for a short period of time, for a couple of years, while they are growing and developing, and with the idea that ultimately they're going to need, at least for what we know now, lifelong antiretroviral treatment. So again, this is not that. This is purely a description of what we're seeing in this cohort, but hoping that it will prompt some discussion and potential carefully designed clinical studies to look at this as an option for some children as they age into teenage years and adulthood.
So the issue is that since the recommendation is to treat all children, we can't tell who is a non-progressor, because there is no test right now, maybe in the future, that would be able to predict who is going to be someone whose immune system can handle HIV by itself. And you think that these people are those?
Correct. I mean, I think, you know, there's been a lot of work presented at this conference of potentially genetic markers that are associated with being able to control HIV and maintain a CD4 count. We don't have any of that information on this group, but I think it's a very good point that it would be, I think, something we would have the ability to do it because it's designed within the study to be able to look at those kinds of things, that we would potentially be able to look at something like that.
Couldn't it be that these are kind of like the perfect kind of patients who started early during acute infection? I mean, I don't know. It's a different population, but they started way early. And so could it be that their immune system, it's not that they're not progressors, but that something happened with the early treatment that enabled them to later not have to take treatment?
I doubt that, because basically the numbers that I said about the time that they started ARVs and the median duration of treatment is very similar to the rest of the group that actually has continued on treatment. And so I think, again, the point that you did make, which is that in this country and now increasingly around the world, the push is when a baby or a young child is diagnosed, almost all of them end up on treatment. I think in the United States, we've been quite aggressive with that. And so almost all diagnosed infants and young children in this country in the past used to go on treatment. And so I don't think, but again, I think something we should probably make sure of, because I think it's a good question, make sure that it's not that there was something different about the trajectory of treatment in these children. But as I say, from what I can remember, they did not differ from the rest of the group that have had to continue on treatment.
And so what are some of the reasons that these children discontinue treatment?
So you know what we have actually here is, this is actually a piece of the study that we had to go back and ask the sites for this information. So they were then going back to their medical records to try to piece out. And so basically it was in most of them that the person looking after them really felt that they didn't need antiretroviral. So I think there was a hint, even while they were on treatment, that maybe they didn't seem to be having illnesses the way the other children were, that they were able to very easily get their CD4 counts up and keep their viral loads down. But for whatever reason, the major reason for why they were not on treatment was the sense of the caregiver, the clinician, that they didn't seem to need antiretroviral treatment.
This is, I believe, the first time ever described. Am I right?
So, you know, it's interesting. So it's one of the reasons we wanted to do it, but I have to say that it's something that all of us as clinicians, and in fact, almost about half the people that have come by the poster today have said, oh, well, we have these kids as well in our practices. So I think it's something that we've all recognized, but you're exactly right. There's not been extensive description of it. And so that's what we were trying to do in a small way. I do want to say just down the way as well is that this phenomenon is potentially much, much more common in the developing world because of the fact that the only children that are surviving until recently, the only children that would survive into adolescence were kids that were long-term non-progressors. Because if they didn't have treatment beforehand, unfortunately then, most HIV-infected children would die, and it would be then that you would have a lot of adolescents that then make up a much larger percentage of the population. And so, you know, I think it's something that we as clinicians have recognized, but it's just not been something that we've been able to systematically describe, but this project has given us that opportunity.
So what percentage of children are thought to be non-progressors? I mean, do we know from the developing world?
You know, I don't think we know, because what we end up doing is, I mean, here, you know, would we say 5%? I have to say, as a clinician and talking to some of the other clinicians, that seems about right. Some folks say they have maybe 10%. But what we're always missing is the denominator. So, you know, here we have probably a better sense because at least it's from a whole cohort. But we don't know that there may be some bias as to who actually is enrolled into this study, and either that these children are overrepresented in this study because they're doing well, or that they're underrepresented because, you know, the kids that are not on treatment or in fact not seeking care regularly, and so therefore they don't end up showing up at the sites to actually be eligible. So I don't think we know, but I think roughly most of us would say it's somewhere in the 5 to 10% range.
What are your next steps?
So, as I said, the big thing about this project is really trying to identify, you know, overall how these youth are surviving and I would like to hope thriving despite their HIV and their transition into the late teen years and young adulthood. So that's the larger project. I think this particular project, you've actually raised some of the issues. I think we need to tease out out a little bit more. What are the factors about these 9 youth that have allowed them to do this? I think potentially considering some of the genetic questions that you've asked. And I think we should have, again, I think a lot of discussion, but again, would stress, you know, this is not something to try at home. I mean, I think that we'd want to, think about, is there a carefully designed clinical trial that we could do to try to see if we can do this in a systematic fashion? Because I think these are real issues for youth in terms of medication fatigue, adherence. Usually it's in these years that responsibility for medication administration switches from the parent to the child as well. Plus, there's just a lot of issues going on in adolescence, and that I think being able to have the option of considering treatment cessation temporarily for these youth would be a very good one within the clinical armamentarium.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.